we were evergreen. And, you know, I think Jim Dolan said something like, if it exists, I'm not interested.
Yeah.
Which is a great line to say from his perspective, right? He's a single, you know, it's his family office effectively.
Welcome to Boston Blockchain, where we focus on the people and projects that are driving innovation in the industry. I'm Kyle Hedman of China Shop Productions, and today's guest is Rusty Matveev, Chief Strategy Officer at Calyxy. In this episode, Rusty shares his nonlinear path to venture capitalism that started on the entrepreneurial side. Our conversation highlights the evolving nature of the blockchain ecosystem and the opportunities it presents for entrepreneurs and investors alike. Be sure to check the links in the show notes to learn more about Rusty's latest project, Calyxy. Now, let's meet our guest. Thank you, Rusty, for taking some time to stop by. Have you been enjoying the event so far?
Good morning. Thank you for having me. Admittedly, today has actually been my first day, but I will be coming today and tomorrow. So I haven't. Well, I have spoken with some people, but I have not actually been on the grounds yet.
Looking at the agenda they got for today, I think you picked the right one to show up for. Yesterday was a lot of good stuff, but man, they got a lot of really cool topics planned for today.
I'm definitely excited to dive in. Yeah.
So how did you get involved in the blockchain space in general?
Yeah, an interesting journey. I'm a big believer in, you know, no founder or no, you know, no people have linear paths. So my first foray, I mean, I've been familiar with like Bitcoin for like a long time, you know, Silk Road stuff, kind of hearing sort of like the dark shadows of what it was supposed to be. I know some people that at one point had like, you know, tens or like, if not 100 Bitcoin, but wasted it on, you know, God knows, on pizza or God knows what back in the day. Not literally pizza, but like worse stuff on those kind of platforms. My direct like business side of kind of getting introduced and involved with it, I helped launch a group called Madison Square Garden Ventures, which is now the Sphere in Las Vegas. That's the company behind
that's
the Sphere.
Okay. Yeah. Oh, cool.
So when we were there, I was one of the earliest employees. You know, we had a remit and that we reported directly to like Jim Dolan, the owner of like the Knicks, Rangers, and MSG. And his whole thing was, if it exists, I'm not interested, right? And he wanted to redefine the live entertainment industry.
Okay.
And so in that process, I was there for about 3 years, from like 2016 through about 2018, mid-2018. I had a couple of friends that actually left working for some pretty great groups and joined Consensus and joined, I think it's called Mesh XYZ now, but joined that group. And they came and like, hey, we want to talk to you guys as MSG about the powers of blockchain. And I had a couple of other startups that like pitched me maybe for ticketing and some other use cases, but it was like not a full dive. It was just a kind of someone was pitching me a specific idea.
Right.
Consensus came, or I think that was the group, I don't mean to misquote them, but came to us with a whole vision of what could be, you know, a back end of operations, what ticketing could look like, what, you know, loyalty and fan engagement could look like.
Oh man, yeah.
So it was again, it was early-ish days. I mean, for the true sort of degens, it probably doesn't feel quite like that. But this is like circa 2017, I want to say, like mid early 2017.
So it's about the time when it was like getting its second wave.
Yeah. So like, I don't want to like, you know, pretend that I'm from the original wave. But anyway, they were pitching us this whole vision. I was head of innovation, and I think my title was, I had like three silly titles, but it was venture investing, innovation, and like sort of emerging technology. And so that fit right into, you know, into my wheelhouse and remit there. So, you know, kind of heard everything out, saw this big broad package, and like they kind of pulled out all the stops. They were pitching, you know, Madison Square Garden. So it was a big deal.
Right.
There was a lot of venues and Sphere was coming and all this stuff. So that was probably my first like real dive into it. And it definitely lit a fire under me, because the guy who I was talking to, great guy, I think he's still there. He was like, look, I've been in the space for, you know, a couple years, and I feel like I'm a decade behind. And every day I learn as much as I can, and I feel like I'm, you know, still every day there's another year that I'm behind.
It feels like you're not even catching up,
yeah,
right?
Yeah. And that like sparked my curiosity, and I was like, man, that's awesome. And I respect the guy, and his name is Sean, and he, you know, really smart guy too. And I was like, man, if he's this hyped about it, he's like, I'm going to spend the next decade of my life only being in this space and sort of like dropping everything else. And he was an investor. He was doing other cool things with high profile groups and people. And yet this was his passion. So I was like, all right, like I'm interested. So ever since then.
Is he the guy that got you on the continuous pursuit of knowledge that I see quoted in your LinkedIn?
No, I mean, I don't want to give him that kind of credit. No, that's an internal, like, you know, passion since being a kid and being curious and loving, you know, tech and science and everything. So no, but this is just definitely that category. And it more so like gave me the exposure and the potential of what it could be in a real use case, right? In a retail and entertainment, and again, stuff I was focusing on, consumer use case more so than maybe like the DeFi stuff and like, you know, a lot of the crypto-esque more infrastructure-y things, although this, of course, was related to infrastructure. But yeah, I mean, I think that really gave me the first exposure into it, and I haven't looked back ever since. I mean, I'm still investing and doing other things, but this is, you know, very much in my DNA right now.
It feels almost like when you start like learning about blockchain, it feels like you're peeling back layers of an onion. Like every layer you see more and more potential awesome uses for it. But on the surface, it looks like it's just a boring onion.
Yeah. You know? Yeah. And again, I have a really unique advantage, well, perspective and opportunity. And I don't want to call it necessarily an advantage, but yes, an advantage, which is I get to see, you know, both sides of this world, meaning I'm also an operator in the space. And I also get to have the fortunate opportunity to hear, you know, to hear startups and pitches and not just early stage startups, later stage startups. So I do get to see a lot of, you know, a lot of different unique things,
right,
which really, to your point, really peels back a lot of layers of that onion. So yes, there's definitely many like on the nose, you know, here's a wallet or here's an exchange or here's this, here's a protocol. But then we see a lot of really cool use cases as well.
Right. I mean, you've got a lot of history here as a VC, but like, how do you get into that? Because you seem like kind of a young guy.
Probably look maybe a bit younger than I am.
Okay.
No, again, like I mentioned a few minutes ago, right? And I believe this even when I invest in, you know, we do diligence and meet founders and stuff. No founder has a linear path. It's never like, I want to be this and, you know, this was my major in college and I'm now that. That's very rare anyway.
Right, right.
I was a founder and entrepreneur really always since before college. I'm first generation sort of immigrant. My family moved here when I was like two or three. My dad started a company like in the early 2000s and late 90s. So like, I think I had that since, since playing Monopoly at age like six, you know? and so helping like my father out and that kind of stuff, like being on phone calls at ages 10, 11 and 12, like on his behalf, cause his English wasn't good. And so I was speaking to groups and selling and doing all this kind of weird stuff. So like, really it was this interesting path of like being on the entrepreneur and founder side, struggling to raise money, bootstrapping, failing a lot and all this kind of stuff. And then sort of one fine day in, 2015, like summer, I came across someone that was, I had an opportunity to pitch in New York City to the, funny enough, he's now the mayor of New York City, Eric Adams. So I was pitching my startup, which was like a smart city platform, to the mayor, he was the Brooklyn Borough President at the time, right, of in New York. And I was pitching him all the smart city stuff and it was cool. And he made some introductions to the MTA, the train system there. And then I had an opportunity to pitch to MSG, to Madison Square Garden. And I kind of thought that they would have everything I was already pitching. I assumed a lot more, you know, of them. And once I started getting deeper in those conversations, they were like, look, we're about to launch a venture arm. No one knows this. You should talk to them. And I'm still thinking in pitch mode. I'm like, yeah, absolutely. I'll pitch it, you know, let them back me. This is amazing. And it's strategic and all this stuff. And sure enough, they like, you know, they kind of peeled another layer of the onion and they're like, hey, we're going to redefine entertainment. We want to build this crazy new venue of the future. You should join us. And I was like, not looking for a job. I was like, I don't know about that, but you should use my tech. Like this will perfectly line up. And so that conversation went for, 3, 4, 6 months probably. It kept going. And eventually they kind of made me an offer I couldn't refuse because it was just working on really amazing stuff at the largest scale possible. And I get to like all of a sudden be on the investment side. So that, you know, that was kind of my foray into it. And I still got to operate because it wasn't purely investing. We didn't have a financial mandate. We were evergreen. And, you know, I think Jim Dolan said something like, if it exists, I'm not interested.
Yeah.
Which is a great line to say from his perspective, right? He's a single, you know, it's his family office effectively.
Right. And if you're going to be running an innovation arm, then
Yeah. You know, and again, on top of that, we didn't have this crazy return we didn't have a return mandate, which is sort of the traditional VC space of like, hey, we need to make, you know, this much, you know, bottom line. Of course, there's always a bottom line, but the cool aspect and really what spoke to me as an entrepreneur and founder was that we were looking for tech and for things to integrate into the venue and into the future of like this tech thing. So it was, again, use case driven, and that really fired me up. And I like, you know, I think I had, you know, it was the luckiest sort of right place, right time. And I was the first hire externally there. I think I was like number 4 overall or number 5 overall or something. And then that company grew to like over 100 people, not on the venture side. Ventures only grew to 4. And then funny enough, it went down to just me. The managing director left about a year in.
Mm-hmm.
And so I really got thrown into the deep end. Had some exposure, raising some money from the founder side, but never really, you know, operating as a VC at that point. And if anyone knows about the space, it's really like mentor driven in a big way, right? Like that knowledge, to your point, like you can't just break into it for the most part. Nowadays, there's like, you know, classes at whatever, Stanford, Columbia, and Harvard.
A lot of the incubator people that we've talked to here And like, that's part of like what they do. They don't just give you money. Like they're going to give you some help too.
Yeah, exactly.
It makes sense. Like
that exact angle is what I've envisioned for myself and kind of what I operate on now is like, I always thought there's going to be groups that are going to be very technical, right? Some young guys out of MIT that are going to have great tech, but they're not going to have that business side, or from my experience, the opposite side where you had a great idea and maybe some good business and some marketing, but you didn't have your CTO or your design or whatever. And so being able to bridge those pieces together, that really spoke to me. And so like, you know, again, haven't looked back ever since. I've been investing ever since 2016, and it's been, you know, quite a ride, and hopefully it's still the beginning of my journey because it's been almost a decade. But
It doesn't seem like it.
Yeah, I know. Right? I mean, I've been operating for well over 15 years at this point in terms of an operator, but not on the investment side. That's about a decade.
So you kind of have like the unique experience then of being on both sides of like the VC table. Like you've been giving the pitches and you've also sat and listened to the pitches. So what are some of the things that you look for as when you're looking at like a potential company to invest in or to sponsor?
Yeah, great question. Good timing as well. I think it's interesting, specifically in the blockchain space, the waves of, you know, things that are happening in the market, the bull and the bear market and kind of what's going on. I personally look at failure a lot. It's not that I don't believe in, because I have been, and even right now, I'm the CEO of the company that I'm operating at is the first-time founder. I look for sort of not first-time founders, or at least I give them more of a weight in my like rubric, if you will.
You want to make sure that they've had some of the chances to grow or experienced a little bit of
adversity.
Adversity. Thank you. Yeah, yes, that
exactly that exactly that that builds character, that builds experience, that gives you so much to like pull from. And I know maybe that seems cliche, but it just can't. You know, from my own personal experiences, I don't think I would be here and I'd have the same mindset and the same, you know, things. And again, I'm nowhere near the end of my road either if I didn't have the failures that I did in the beginning. Yeah. So I greatly value that. And so I'm not just saying just team, but, you know, it's of course a mix of the right team or founder, the right opportunity. And, you know, of course there's luck involved. And also can, you know, personally, as we invest or choose to invest or not, we're never money. Like, first of all, we're not big enough to be, you know, to be just money. We're not leading deals at this point. I have personally, you know, when I was at MSG and stuff, but as my own fund, I'm not. And so like, is there, you know, are there pieces that I could bring to the table that actually give you value? And if the answer is yes, that also, you know, checks the box. So it's a combination of those things, team opportunity to do it. You know, do we like the space? Is there conviction behind it? Does the founder have like a delusional vision, or in a good way and bad way? You have to have a little bit of that. At the same time, you know, it's a double-edged sword. And again, you know, do we believe in this future? Like, can we passionately, or can we with conviction see that future coming to reality? If, you know, if it's an early enough deal, or perhaps it's the other way around and you're looking at a, you know, multi-billion-dollar deal, and it's a later stage, and at that point, it's a different kind of conversation. But I think some factor of those things.
So, if you had something that had the tech but not the personality, or you had someone with the personality but not the tech, which of the two would you prefer to put your money behind?
It's a great, 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 great question. I mean, the cop-out answer is it depends, right?
Right.
Opportunistically, how much of a gap, it's not even like that individual, but how much of a gap can we help bridge? Can other groups that we're investing help bridge? Is it as simple as like, you know, yeah, you just need to, you know, you have a great product that's ready. You just need the, you know, an appropriate business head and sales side and you're good, et cetera, et cetera. Or on the flip side, if it's, you know, if it's a business person, you know, how technically difficult is that vision to accomplish? I mean, of course, you know, I think of personally, just because I sit on more of the business and tech side or venture side, I probably skew a little bit more towards product and tech to say like that needs to be there. I generally don't invest like in pre-seed and seed, although I do love working with, you know, accelerators, launch pads and that kind of thing, because that's, you know, kind of like scouting and all that stuff. So I think, you know, the tech has to be there, the product has to be there, and then I think the rest can come into place and you can, you know, it's easier to put that in.
I assume, obviously, you want a combination of both, but
if
you had a preference towards one side or the other, it sounds like the tech is
kind of... It's far more difficult to build the tech than to accomplish the business side. Because I feel like, you know, with my own, you know, just, I think anyone's ego or that kind of thing, that if they're in a certain space, they believe that they can do it if they needed to. Not that I'm going to jump into their company, but... You know, if I can see the pieces, that means there's someone else that I know that can be put in that in a full-time capacity can connect those dots and make it happen.
Yeah. Interesting.
Yeah. Good question.
So if you had to give any advice to people who are like preparing for a pitch, then what sort of things would you tell them?
Yeah. I mean, you know, there's all those golden rules that you see out there in terms of what should be in your deck and what you should say. I mean, honestly, it's cutting through a lot of the noise and just start with the end, right? Like, give me the big picture. Like, it's not, don't shy away from saying, like, you know, in 5 years, this could look like X, Y, and Z, because you definitely want to have that framework. I would say, you know, give me the most concise version of everything. Don't assume that people know anything or, you know, have, like, a lot of people just jump into, like, saying, you know, whether it's
overwhelm you with tech speak kind of
yeah,
thing.
Right? Yeah. Right. It's, and again, I have some background, it's probably more than an average person, but at the same time, like, don't assume that, right? Give me a simplistic, concise, I think is the key version. A lot of people will come in and paint an entire story and start giving you justifications and all this stuff before there's even like an objection of any kind. So, you know, start with the beginning in mind. Start with the ending in mind. Give that big picture vision. And then, you know, I think with the market where it is, you know, let's be realistic. Again, anyone will push back on like things like valuation and stuff. That's, for me, that's almost never like stop the deal. I can't remember who, this is a quote, it's not my saying, but like, on a top 10 list of things that, you know, we factor in, valuation's 11, right? It's not going to make or break a deal, especially if we're talking like, you know, is it a $20 million deal or 30, or is it a 10 or 15? Like, those are such small numbers. If we all think big picture, we're going for, you know, much larger exits, and that's not going to matter at the end of the day. At the same time, if you're, you know, again, a pre-seed or seed company, and yes, you know, we've all experienced this very recently in the Web3 world, and you're telling me it's a 50 or 100 or $150 million opportunity or valuation based on sort of nothing,
right?
You know, I think that kind of discipline is going to shift back. And I'm, again, from my side as a VC, we see that from LPs, right? A lot of people in this last cycle have gotten rightfully so in a big way, like, you know, slapped on the wrist by their LPs to be like, you know, what were you thinking here? Like, why did you buy in? And just because, you know, some big name firm is in on this valuation doesn't mean that you should be doing it. You know, it's sort of stick within your discipline or stay true to like first principles. So I think the, you know, diligence is obviously everything. So I want to be able to buy in and have like get excited and have that kind of conviction. So like excite me, like sell me. I don't care if you're the CTO, like get me close to your level of that kind of excitement. So I leave that meeting and that pitch thinking about that the rest of the day, effectively being like, man, right, if this can happen or that can happen, I see it. Like, this is the future. I think that, you know, that's maybe easier said than done, but that's, you know, I'm hoping to be moved that way. I'm looking for someone that's, you know, that's going to work. Any entrepreneur is going to work day and night, but it's someone that's so dang passionate that they're going to accomplish it sort of like no matter what. They have that kind of delusion. Again, the positive side of that double-edged sword.
Sort of like the Elon Musk.
Make it happen.
You better sleep in the factories until this product's out.
Exactly. Yeah. I mean, Elon Musk, even just the last couple of weeks, days, months, I mean, I was fortunate enough to sit on a conference call and hear some of his vision when he first bought X, but not even for X and Twitter, but for his broader view on like his whole X holdings, and telling, you know, saying things like robots are going to be the future. And again, that's not some like novel idea or approach. We've all seen it. Heck, even in MSG Sphere, there are like literally robots in the lobby.
Right.
But like that kind of conviction. And then all of a sudden there's this underlying aspect of what they happen to be doing at Tesla is building, you know, automation machines or robots to help build their thing. But now that can be translated to a different business line altogether. That's incredible. I mean, again, he's at the edge of the extreme.
See, I always thought he bought Twitter just because he got mad at that kid who was tracking his jet.
Yeah, right. No, I mean, I had many friendly groups that were, you know, that gave me allocation and opportunity to come in at, you know, I think the valuation was like 30 or 40 billion. And they didn't bat an eyelash at that. And these are respected groups that are obviously doing their own diligence. And meanwhile, you have other people, you know, sort of wrong, right, or indifferent, saying that's absolutely insane. Like, there's what's the upside, et cetera, et cetera. But like the other groups are like, this is going to be $1 trillion company without question, a multi-$1 trillion company. Mm-hmm. We're coming in early in a way, which is just, you know, kind of funny and wild to say. So yeah, I mean, it's definitely interesting and different on every scenario, of course.
Okay, here's another question I like to ask VCs, especially guys who've been around for a while. What's the one that hurts the most that you passed on?
Also a great question that we passed on.
I talked to a guy who passed on SpaceX in the early days. Like, oh man, that hurts.
Yeah, we definitely had some opportunities into SpaceX and groups like that too. You know, when in the early days, so 2016 to 2018 kind of days for me, early days. I say that with such naivety because like I know my own history, you know, the history of the space, and it's obviously far from early days. You know, we had a pretty tight remit. Again, it had to fit into the venue. It had to fit into some application that we wanted to do. So there was definitely deals that I was very excited about that we didn't, you know, participate
didn't
in.
Didn't fit your mission.
Yeah, that didn't exactly fit the mission. There was ones that even like were just cool that maybe haven't necessarily made it. So it's not that it hurt. Oh, we didn't do Uber. I think like I point to Uber from a totally different angle. I mentioned earlier that my father had started a business. So my father was in the business of town cars and limos and car services in like 2000 and 98, 97, yeah. 2002, like those kinds of years. And it hurts me that I didn't do that. Right. Like I should have done that. We definitely have thought about the idea of technology enabling that kind of stuff. So that would have been a great one to either invest in, of course, but I'm an investor in other ways there, but not not in the earliest of days. Honestly, again, I've been very fortunate and lucky. We didn't have the typical competition of like getting onto the cap table. People wanted MSG there. So like we didn't miss out on a lot of deals.
Right.
There's some cool ones that are maybe just more cool factors. There was a group called like Lightfield Labs, which I thought was really cool, that I thought also could fit into our vision, but it was just a little early back then. Shout out to them. I think that they're definitely still operating.
Yeah.
There was a group, there was a couple other groups, you know, even something like Drone Racing League, totally a different animal.
Oh, I remember those. Yeah. That was actually a really fun.
It was cool. Yeah. Yeah. It's still cool. I think they either just got bought. Something just happened with them. I can't remember.
They're still around?
Yeah, they're still around.
Awesome.
So there's a lot of cool things. Honestly, again, personal passions have been like, there's been opportunities to invest in like sports franchises and that kind of thing at very early days too.
Yeah.
That I think would have been really great. And then financially, they've obviously all risen. So those are things that, again, not venture-esque, but more like personal passions.
Yeah. I see you also spent some time in Washington. You said you spent some time in New York, and now you're living in Boston. Mm-hmm. So I'm curious how the environment here is. As it relates to embracing like crypto and the technology, like how does this compare to some of the other larger metros that you've lived in?
Yeah, yeah. So sort of between New York, Seattle, Boston, and again, we invest obviously everywhere. Different communities, different focuses. And I think that's really cool, right? The fact that there's not necessarily a niche or a focus, because I don't think that you want to limit a certain city to, you know, like New York might be traditionally DeFi, or
right.
Seattle was called like Cloud City for a long time because of like their infrastructure stuff and AWS and Microsoft Azure and all that stuff. And Boston, I mean, from the crypto sense alone, I think that there's a niche in every city. There's a pocket in every city, no matter what.
Yeah.
I think organically here in Boston, and admittedly, look, I've lived here for, I went to college here, you know, more than a decade ago, but I've lived here for about, 4 years now. COVID was in that process. So I haven't gotten to delve in as much as I really wanted to when I first moved here.
Mm-hmm.
But like knowing that, you know, MIT is here, like a group like this is, you know, Quibic Labs is here. There's all these groups that I think have a lot of technical acumen just organically by virtue of, you know, MIT and Harvard and that kind of stuff. So I think that's excellent and awesome. I wouldn't rank them in any way.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, Seattle, again, it's completely different. I haven't lived there. I still go there, but I haven't lived there for a number of years.
I used to live in that area too, actually. I was stationed up in Bangor, Washington.
Oh, yeah.
The sub base there.
Yeah, absolutely. Yep. That's very cool. My family was just there this summer. We stayed on, not Gig Harbor, Oak Harbor,
yeah,
which is not too far from there,
yeah.
on an island for a little while. And we saw a lot of military jets and stuff. That's cool. Thank you for your service,
by the way. I appreciate
that. So, you know, I feel even more comfortable describing maybe their venture ecosystems, but on the crypto side, I think anything can come from anywhere. That's kind of the beauty of crypto. And we see that from a global perspective. You know, we have lots of investors from Eastern Europe, from Asia, from like, you know, various different places. And I think like part of this path to decentralization in a lot of different ways is that anyone could do anything from anywhere. I'd like to think that's the case with any tech and startup, but you know, having a great ecosystem in your city makes it significantly easier. Plus it does give you, to your point, legitimacy from even like the venture ecosystem perspective. Are you coming out of, you know, the Bay Area? Are you coming out of, you know, somewhere else? Or are you coming out of like, I don't know, Iowa or Kansas? No offense to Iowa or Kansas. I know investors that investors that exclusively invest in the Midwest, and there's an opportunity everywhere. So again, I think, you know, the more is better. Like we want to have more embracing of that, whether it's through sort of like grant and municipal and community actions or organic, you know, startups that are happening in these cities and therefore that are, you know, creating jobs and more vibrant, you know, events like this and so on.
And one thing I got to say before I forget, because Laura and I were talking about this yesterday, like we've just been so impressed by the openness and like the friendliness and everybody involved in this community. Mm-hmm. And then crypto gets kind of a bad reputation sometimes as being like the bra scene, you know, and hodl to the moon and that kind of stuff. And to see like the complete opposite of that, it's just been such a great experience getting to meet all these people, and just everyone's so welcoming, so friendly. It's been amazing.
Yeah. You know, there's a lot to be said for sort of the open source-esque nature of the space. Again, there's, of course, equivalents in the Web 2 space, if you will. But I agree, right? I think like so many, even just like the nature of like protocols and how they're public and, you know, anyone could build, you don't necessarily need to go and work with Amazon or get, even though that's very right. easy to go get AWS stuff, but like you can just go and, you know, if you have a good team or anyone technical, they can go and build on top of, you know, an EVM or any chain right. that you want to. And I think that's great. From a collaboration standpoint, yeah, very few times have I encountered such, you know, a very competitive nature that's way more prevalent in the Web2 space. And again, it's not so much right or wrong. It's just different. It's nascent. So I think people are just also just trying to come up and by any means necessary. So I agree. I mean, I think
that that's even great. The VCs have like really impressed us too. Like you get the idea of like VCs being like bottom line focused right. on the dollar. And then it's not that at all. Like there's
yeah.
just a bunch of people passionate about projects and trying to help other people succeed.
Yeah. I'd like to think that's the case. And there's definitely some bad reputations, but at the same time, you know, like, nothing is all pure, right? There's bad yeah. actors, and it's much easier to maybe be a bad actor in this space.
Well, they get all the attention too. Like we need to
right.
highlight the people who aren't,
yeah.
I think.
Yeah, that's
there needs
right.
to be some balance there.
Absolutely, right? And so, you know, there's those stories exist everywhere, and they always have yeah. throughout history and in business. So again, not unique to Web3. I've been very personally just fortunate that I've always, you know, I've had opportunities and to get into deals, even from very, very large groups. So that's never been a barrier for me. Whereas perhaps on the Web2 side, that's maybe been a bit more prevalent. But, you know, I think it takes a village, right? So
yeah.
like there's a lot of that where, like for me, as I look at whether our own investors or as I invest, the whole portfolio and network effect, right? That there's a lot to say to that, to where like, oh, you know, we have this company that does this that could work well with you. So yeah, I think that makes a lot of sense because we want the entire market to rise and to gain sort of like mainstream legitimacy, and that opportunity is here. And this is almost like one of the last vestiges of the Wild West. I mean, I'm sure not one of the last, it's all cyclical, but this is an opportunity. You know, everyone likes to say, how do we onboard the first, you know, billion people or the next 100 million users? So I don't care if you're, you know, Coinbase or MetaMask or, you know, a traditional mainstream bank or something altogether different, you know, consumer app, you know, there's a lot of pieces have to come into play, and you have to work with a lot of people to then, you know, to get that kind of scale.
Yeah. Well, we talked a little bit about some of your experience as a VC. Like, are there any projects that you're involved with that you are like really excited about?
I mean, obviously my own, so I'm biased there. So
yeah.
I'm the chief strategy officer of a group called Galaxy, which is a really interesting startup in the Web3 social wallet marketplace. Kind of a lot of descriptions there.
I watched a video, I think, of the founder demonstrating some of the tech. So like you can use that to send crypto to your friends,
yeah.
like basically as easy as like sending a text message.
Yeah, yeah,
That's crazy.
It is crazy, and I think more to come. There's we have two co-founders. One of them is, as you just mentioned, is an NBA player by the name of Spencer Dinwiddie. He's the co-founder and chairman. He was sort of the founder of this idea and vision. Our other co-founder is our CEO, a gentleman named Solo Cisse, who's you know, also a great young mind and a thought leader in the space. He is, he's passionate about a lot of things and has that perfect balance of like that delusion, you know, of like grandeur. And at the same time, you know, being able to push us forward by any means necessary, by sheer will, if that's what it takes. And, you know, I respect it and love it. It's you know, it's a different, again, it's a different animal to drive in the space than if you're just doing like a enterprise SaaS or something. So it takes a lot of courage and that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
You know, our project was born in a really unique way because Spencer isn't, you know, a LeBron James, right? He's not some tier one, like superstar athlete either, but he is an NBA player. So it gave us some kind of platform and jumping off point. His vision was effectively, he actually tokenized or securitized his NBA contract back in, I think, 2020. And while we were going through that process.
Oh, because he plays for Dallas, right?
He plays for Dallas now this upcoming year. He's played for them once before. He was on the Lakers last year.
And Cuban was paying players in Bitcoin at one point.
He was open
wasn't
to
he?
It. Yeah, that yeah. was part of the thing there. When I met Spencer, I think it was 2018, he was on the Brooklyn Nets at the time. And so he was tokenizing his NBA contract. And there was a whole deal. You know, he went through some, or that happened in 2020, but he was, you know, the NBA had some opinions and sued him, but everything has, you know, come together well. He did, in fact, go through with that and, you know, proved out in a really interesting case that, you know, still really isn't done on a mainstream level. We had a ton of interest. No one really knows this part, but we had a ton of interest. We had, you know, 4 or 5 dozen other athletes wanting to follow suit and join us in tokenizing their contracts.
That's
and
awesome.
So, like,
yeah.
we, you know, I think at one point we had like $500 million of contract value, maybe even a little more of contract value in line to do this. We ended up not pursuing that from the standpoint of regulatory uncertainty and a lot of other reasons. But in that process, he was going to be a free agent the following year. And he was like, look, what about this vision I have of like, I'm a free agent next year. What team should I join? I'm playing the Lakers tonight. What shoes should I wear? And like kind of, you know, decentralizing or democratizing decision making and like your own life as an influencer. And so Galaxy was born from that. It's called Creator's Galaxy. It was kind of the moniker, the name at the time. We've pivoted a few times. We've been building for longer than I would say maybe the average path is, about 4 years. But at this, we technically are live, but we built on a specific chain that called Hedera, which again is a great chain for a lot of enterprise use cases, but it just hasn't had a ton of retail. So that's been a factor, and we could speak towards ecosystems in a minute too. We're about to launch, and I don't want to preemptively announce anything, but we're about to launch and support some other ecosystems that are significantly more retail focused and larger. It's really exciting. And it pretty much the idea is...
Do you know when that should be coming down the pipe?
Early September.
Okay.
It's already early September. I would say by the end of the month or maybe the first week of October. So stay tuned.
So maybe we need to get you back on then once you get some of those features launched. Yeah.
Yeah. It's really exciting because what we're trying to really do is there's a lot of angles, right? We're not trying to present ourselves as a social media platform per se, because that's also kind of wild. We're not the next Instagram or right. Twitter, but a lot of what our platform looks like, it does look like that. Mm-hmm. We have a chief design officer named Chad Weston, who is excellent, and he made the entire sort of crypto aspect of this under the hood, right? And so like any user can come in and use this, and it feels great. It pretty much is a combination of something like a Cameo and a Reddit or a Discord.
I love Cameo.
And an Amazon, right? And, yeah. and by the way, Cameo, I don't know if you've seen some of the recent news, they're dealing with a lot of troubles, financial troubles.
Oh, I haven't.
I mean, after as recently as a couple of years ago being, I think, valued at over $1 billion, there's stuff in the news. I also like them. I don't want to talk anything negative about them, but they've had a lot of financial struggles. And so, we're bringing all these pieces together and really just kind of giving you as a creator, as an individual, as a brand, et cetera, the tools to A, go direct to consumer, not have any like censorship or, central force blocking you in any way. So whether that's, with Apple and Epic case or, rules on Meta or any of these kinds of things, you wouldn't be blocked by this. Plus, we open the door for you to not only accept traditional sort of credit card and fiat stuff, but accept crypto, right? And that's also kind of an interesting angle. So we have a really wide variety of use cases and type of creators and people on there, which is like everyone from, podcasters like yourselves. We have comedians, we have chefs, we have professional athletes, fitness influencers, kind of like the whole gamut. And we envision, we want to be the home for online communities. And it's just kind of an all-in-one tool that allows you to do that more effectively, better, and in your own world. So you don't need to come to Galaxy to launch anything, right? We actually give you your own effectively white labeled version of this. And so you can go directly to consumer, own your audience, the data, the connective points, like all that kind of stuff. And even beyond the home screen of people's phones without having to be a mobile app and give up 30% to an Apple or a Google. And it's a 3-second process, which is what's really cool. It really like there's an aha or a boom moment when someone sees like their logo or their name or their icon all of a sudden just pop up on the home screen in one click. And so anyway, we're very excited about that. A lot more to come there.
Well, I heard podcasts in there. So by the time we talk next time, we'll probably be on your app there.
Love it. Definitely. We'd love to have you there.
All right. Anything else you want to say before we wrap things up here?
No, I mean, I'm excited to be here at Boston Blockchain Week. I want to see the ecosystem, more and more to like see what people are up to and working on. That's definitely what's exciting, is to get, one-on-one or get closer to the founders and all the interesting, curious people that are doing stuff and seeing what kind of use cases are out there. Is there an opportunity to partner with them? Is there an opportunity to invest with them and so on? So I'm definitely excited to be here from that standpoint. And, always, as we said in the beginning, right, learn more and dive down that intellectual, curiosity rabbit hole, if you will.
Well, on that note, we've got another event starting in about 2 minutes. So awesome. We should probably wrap this thing up and we can go catch the next one, next speakers then.
Thank you guys so much.
Yeah, thanks for coming by.
The cover art for this podcast was custom designed for us by the amazing people at Epic Made. Epic Made is a digital art and animation studio that actually understands the magic behind powerful creative assets for gaming, entertainment, and tech. So visit epicmade.com to get expert creative help for campaigns, commercials, socials, and more. That's epic-made.com. DSpark is the leading user research platform for Web3. Companies can easily get feedback from any type of user, helping them build better products and improve their marketing. If you're interested in giving feedback, get paid USDC to share your opinions and improve Web3. Visit DSpark.io today. That's DESPARK.io. Bola allows you to create, tokenize, and finance invoices and manage all of your on-chain accounts. With TCS Blockchain, they recently went live with their groundbreaking solution that uses blockchain to settle freight invoices 90% cheaper and faster than traditional means. Thank you for helping make this show possible, Bola. Go to bolanetwork.com and tcsblockchain.com to learn more and join the waitlist. Numbers Protocol harnesses blockchain technology to enhance authenticity and traceability of digital content globally, with operational bases in London, LA, Dubai, and Taiwan. Recognized as the best in Web3 at the 2023 SXSW Awards and supported by Google and NVIDIA, Numbers Protocol offers the Capture, an all-in-one suite for content verification, copyright protection, and monetization. This technology has proven pivotal in projects like the archival of the 2020 U.S. presidential election and supports artists and businesses in ensuring the integrity and security of digital media. Jotto is a cutting-edge platform that amplifies the customer voice by making it simple for organizations to gather feedback through video, audio, and text. Using powerful AI, Jotto analyzes this feedback in real time to deliver actionable insights that help organizations understand their audience better. Whether it's governments, businesses, or events, Jotto enables a deeper connection by ensuring every voice is heard and valued. It's an essential tool for anyone looking to turn raw feedback into strategic actions and drive meaningful engagement. So once again, thank you to our sponsors for helping make the show possible, and thank you everybody for listening. The views and opinions expressed on this program are their own and do not necessarily reflect the official policies or positions of any affiliated entities. The information shared in this podcast is for general informational purposes only and should not be construed as financial, legal, or professional advice. Always conduct your own research and consult with a qualified professional before making any decisions based on the content of this podcast. We appreciate your understanding and hope you enjoy the insights and expertise shared in today's episode.